Studio 360.
This month is the 75th anniversary of Tennessee Williams' great groundbreaking play, The Glass Menagerie.
Tennessee Williams was 33 when it opened in Chicago in 1944. And it became this really vivid overnight success. It turned him into a household name.
That's WNYC culture editor Jennifer Vanasco.
The Glass Menagerie is a domestic drama by Tennessee Williams. It takes place all in an apartment in St. Louis. Tennessee Williams called it a memory play, and what he meant by that is that not only is Tom telling it from the future, but he's telling it out of his memory, which means that maybe he doesn't get all the details right.
Being a memory play, it is dimly lighted. It is sentimental. It is not realistic. In memory, everything seems to happen to music. That explains the fiddle in the wings.
So Tom is the narrator of the story. Tom is really a stand-in for Tennessee Williams.
I am the narrator of the play and also a character in it. The other characters in the play are my mother, Amanda, my sister, Laura, and a gentleman caller who appears in the final scenes.
Tom works at a shoe factory. He's really unhappy because really, in his secret heart, he's a poet. Very much like Tennessee Williams. There's Amanda. She is the matriarch of the family, the single mother who's very demanding, very naggy. We also have Laura, Tom's sister and Amanda's daughter. She's kind of emotionally fragile. Laura is most likely based on Tennessee Williams' actual sister, Rose, who herself was later diagnosed with schizophrenia. Laura just really wants to be left alone. She has this collection of glass animals, the glass menagerie, the unicorn, horses, other kinds of animals. She just wants to spend the day polishing them, taking care of them.
My glass collection. They're ornaments, mostly. Most of them are little animals made out of glass. They are the tiniest little animals in the world. Mother calls it my glass menagerie.
And it's a story about nobody getting what they want. The brother wants to escape his dysfunctional family. The sister wants a gentleman caller to rescue her from her shyness. And the mother keeps telling Laura, you need a job or you need a husband.
What are we going to do the rest of our lives? Just stay home, watch the parade go by, amuse ourselves with this glass menagerie, darling.
The glass animals are really the central metaphor for the glass menagerie. One of the glass animals in particular, a unicorn, becomes a metaphor for Laura and for her possibilities in life. When Jim, the gentleman caller, comes and visits, the unicorn breaks.
Oh, my God.
It doesn't matter. I just imagine he had an operation and the horn was removed to make him feel less so freakish. Now it'll be like all the other horses, ones that don't have horns.
And we get the feeling, oh, great, she's no longer going to be a unicorn off by herself, solitary, almost extinct. She is going to be able to have a family and have a life just like everyone else. But by the end of the play, we understand that this glass unicorn, this broken unicorn, is actually a metaphor for all of Laura's broken hopes and that she's never going to be whole again. It's really heartbreaking. The play ends with Tom running off to the Merchant Marines. He has not paid the light bill, so his mother and his sister are left in darkness and kind of despair. It's interesting that the play doesn't really put Tennessee Williams in a very good light. Tom really leaves his family in really dire straits, like maybe even worse straits than they would have been if he hadn't even been in the family. I just reread The Glass Menagerie, and I realized that I've kind of identified with all the different characters at different times. That's one of the things that makes it resonant, even though our world is so different than the 1944 world when it was first written. You can keep mining it for experiences over and over. These characters are still kind of the archetypes that we live with. And so many of us also have, of course, dysfunctional families, and we know what it's like to want to escape our situation, and we know what it's like to really yearn for something more.
Jennifer Vanasco is culture editor at WNYC.